Hey, Scott Spears along with you here on this Getaway Friday. Friday, December the 19th, 2025. 12:19:25, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker here on WGH Talk Radio. And I am so glad to bring in the host of this program from Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, during these holiday times. One of the people who's been with us a long time at this station, and so glad that they are. They feel like family. Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor Whitaker, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you, Scott?
Doing great in full mode of the holiday season.
You know, I'm really ready for this. You know, when you're in a pastor's place, there's so much to do that it's hard to just really feel festive and stay there, if that makes any sense. But, you know, we've had such a wonderful week. I did miss the fruitcake cost. I've got some people in the hospital, and it's just been things pop up, and you got to go.
Absolutely.
What's that?
I say absolutely.
You couldn't hear you, Scott. Say that again.
No, I say absolutely. When people are in the hospital, you got to attend to those things.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, everything's good coming through on your end.
Okay. You might have to be a little louder on your end because but anyway, long story short, it's been a great week. Tuesday, we had Christmas caroling that we did with the kids here in Prospect, the church, and those that come to Team Kid and Meets with the Pastor, of course, the adults and a lot of leaders. It was just a great time. We did Christmas caroling, and we finally finished up our Christmas blessing this year. By the grace of God, and we were able to help right at either, the exact count, we either had 69 or 70 kids that we helped provide Christmas for. And that's just fantastic. And, you know, all we were the delivery method. You know, it's God that provides all that. You know, every year we get down to a week or so before, we think, man, are we going to have enough stuff? And then it just pours in, and it's all provided. It was so wonderful to be able to do that.
You know, this time of year, I can imagine, for pastors, is a very, very busy time.
Well, it is. And you know, one of the odd things that keeps us so busy is that you wouldn't think is, and I know people will say this, that it seems like there's more people in the hospital and passing around Christmas. But, you know, for some reason, it's absolutely true. It seems like every year at Christmas time, we've got two or three people in the hospital, and it's just a very busy time in that way. But, you know, we're glad to go and do what we do, and it's a blessing to be able to do that, especially, you know, with our nursing home ministry, being able to reach out to those people that may not have anyone even come around, and it's a true blessing. One thing I want to talk about, though, what a wonderful time of year we celebrate the birth of our Lord, and it's wonderful to be able to do that. But I want to talk about, which we've kind of been a theme this year with us, Scott, and with you, and you know, talking on the show, is caring about other people and putting others first and loving people. And I've been paying attention to some news sources lately I watch not all the time, I don't get obsessed with it like some, but I watch a very wide range of different news outlets because you get a better picture sometimes. But you know, I'll go to this fellow that was shooting at the schools. You know, I don't know why he was doing that and what was in his mind, but how tragic that somebody can have that much hate side of them. And then I think of the shooting in Australia. How ridiculous that would ever even take place, and especially the reasoning behind it. Don't you think that it's just such a tragic thing when people think so little of human life?
Well, and yes, it's horrible. And last weekend, I mean, as you say, it's hard to pinpoint these things because things go on all the time. But last weekend was particularly a bad weekend when it came to tragedy.
It really was. And you know, like I said, there's just no point in it. You know, in the Bible, one of the verses that we use a lot, that almost every Christian knows, is John 3:16. It is, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life." And you notice that he says, "For God so loved the world." And, of course, John was writing that book, and he's absolutely correct. Jesus didn't come here to this earth as a baby to grow up and take on the sin of the world and pay for it for white people in America. And he didn't do it for black people in Africa. And he didn't do it for black people in America, or white people anywhere in Europe, or Asian people. He did it for everyone. And if we truly believe that, and in our nation, whether, you know, people argue all the time about its founding, but if you really are a history person, you understand that our nation was founded on the principles that it was and when it was founded. Those were Judeo-Christian principles and values. And in those are loving other, putting God first, caring about others before ourselves, freedom, liberty, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and all of those things. But that doesn't just extend to us. We should desire that for other people. Now, we can't do anything about it. You know, we can't go over to, I'll just pick a country, Egypt, and impose on those people that you're suddenly going to have life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. It's not our country, and we don't do that. Now, we can hope for those people. We can care about those people. We can pray for them. But it's just not about caring people that I'm seeing. I want to talk about a little bit, Scott, about hating people and you know, the damage that it causes. You know, in this country, like I said, we're founded on certain values, and we know what they are. And if we can't articulate them, we know by the way we were raised and the freedoms that we have, that there are particular freedoms that Americans themselves enjoy probably a little bit more than any other place. We're raised to know them, we're raised with them, so we don't always recognize them, we just live in them. But, you know, when I think of different cultures, I think of, you know, there's some wonderful Muslim people, there really are. But we run into problems when people with a different culture want to change the founding and culture of America and what it was founded on. I really don't like that a lot of people are teaching a revisionist history that America was founded on being this horrible slave state. And yes, absolutely. We were founded, there were slaves, it was terrible, it was wrong. It had been wrong through history. We've had slavery from the beginning. Some of the slavery around the world took place right up into the 20th century. And some of it still...
We're good. We're good.
And some of it still does. And it's terrible. But the truth is, we are a nation that... In within 70 years of our founding, there was enough pushback to decide we've got to end this thing. And unfortunately, because of hatred and bigotry in a lot of people, things drag on and they don't end as quickly as you would like them to. But, you know, we always have evil among us, don't we?
We do, we do. Sorry, I just had somebody come in the studios. What happened there?
But, yeah, we always have evil among us. And it's up to us that don't want to spread that evil to let the light push away the darkness. And I think, though, there's a difference between caring about people and protecting what you need to protect. A prime example would be, say there's someone that would be a very bad influence on my children. And I know that. And I want to protect my children. I'm not going to invite them over to babysit my kids, but one thing I will do is I will care about that person and do anything I can to help them become a better person and to pray for them. You see the difference. And it's kind of like, you know, I said that there's good Muslim people, but then we look at the religion of Islam, and we look at Islam, and what we see is Sharia law, which trail off pretty tough. You know, you have honor killing of women when they don't do and act as they should. You have women having to cover up and not even barely be seen. They don't believe that women should be educated. It's interesting. I was in some training, and I won't tell you where because I don't want to expose the doctor. But anyway, there was a doctor with a very high position in Ohio State, and he had done a couple tours of Afghanistan working in field hospitals. And he told me that they would come many times to field hospital to have wounds taken care of and, you know, things that just happened that were outside of war in their villages. But it was always the men bringing the boys. Rarely would you see them bring a woman to be fixed. Well, this one particular case, and it shows pictures of this little girl. It's just very heartbreaking. She's about 9 years old, and her dad was one of the village leaders near where they were stationed at with their field hospital. And he brought this little girl in, and she had gangrene in her arm because he had put a tourniquet above her elbow because she had a cut on her arm, not understanding medicine that well, thinking that, well, Americans use tourniquets out here in the field. No, what he did was he cut off all the blood flow, and anyway. So they told him, they said, we're going to have to remove her arm or she's going to die. It was that bad. And he said, no. He said, I'll take her home and take my chances. And they said, why would you do that? And he said, because she's not worth more than one goat with one arm. And, you know, that's heartbreaking to me. He told of when food supplies would come into villages that had been war-torn. And the men and the sons would get the food. If there's any left, the women would come. But what I'm getting at is this, and I'm not saying all these people are so terrible. What I'm saying is, when those people come to the United States of America, they should be welcome to come and enjoy our culture and assimilate into our culture. What we do have to guard against is we have to guard against them wanting to impose their culture on our American values. And that's growing in huge numbers in this country. Now, my thing is, do we love those people? Absolutely. Do we care about them? Absolutely. Do we want to help them? Absolutely. But we have, at the same time, we have a duty to protect our own culture and our own people. And we can do that without hatred. We can defend without hatred. You know, I was listening to a story, and I'm sure you've heard this story many times. I was listening to it repeated yesterday about during World War II, when it was Christmas Eve, and the guys in the trenches laid down their arms and met in the middle and shared Christmas Eve together. And it just started with one person that, put up a, I don't remember what light he put up, but anyway, back and forth, they started sharing different things about Christmas from the ditch. And finally, one of them was brave enough just to walk out, and it ended up with both sides, the Germans and the Americans, coming out of the ditch, meeting in the middle, sharing everything together, singing Christmas carols, doing all those things, and they did that for one night, and then they went back to their ditches. And the truth of the story, the way it goes, is they actually, in both cases, had to send in replacements, because after those guys had spent the whole night before embracing one another and sharing in kindness for the sake of what it was, they didn't want to shoot each other anymore. And so my point is that we do have to protect what we need to protect, but we can even do that in love. Do you grasp what I'm saying?
Oh, I absolutely do. You know, years ago, I interviewed, I'm not even sure if he's still around, but his name was Gale Halverstorm, I believe. And if you look up his story, he was a guy, he was in World War II, he was an American soldier, and during World War II, he was a pilot. And he realized that there were children who were not being attended to and didn't have anything for Christmas. And, of course, he didn't have anything. So he put gum on parachutes, boxes of gum. That's what he had from America. And he would fly over and drop this gum on these poor villages during Christmas. And the kids loved it. And you know, I think that is something very uniquely American and very uniquely, I'm thinking of the word, good-hearted and based in religious doctrine.
You know, do we realize, do people in our country, yes, it is very much based in religious doctrine, do we realize that anytime there's anything that happens in the world, a tragedy, the Americans are the first ones in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Always, without question. And American churches, unbelievable what they do around the country. Samaritan's Purse is just amazing in what they accomplish. And, you know, they go into danger zones, they feed, they educate, they, well, as they can, you know, I mean, they, I guess educating wouldn't be a lot of what they do. But they mostly feed, they have child care, they let people bathe, they wash clothes, you know, all those things to help people in these areas. And, you know, to hear people tear down our country, especially people that have grown up with the privileges in our country, and it's kind of interesting. Some of the people that are out protesting and carrying on about our country could not do what they're doing in another country without being executed for it. And you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they don't realize it's because of the freedoms that were fought for that allow them to do that. And it's just, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, one of the things that has really become a problem in this country, and I'm reading more and more stuff, it's on the right and the left, is this anti-Semitism is crazy.
Oh, unbelievable.
You know, God calls on us, he truly does, to love the Jewish people. And, you know, that was God's decision. Whatever he, you know, if he decided that the Jewish people would be his chosen people, that and we were to love them, we do. And, you know, the thing is, a lot of people, there's an argument out there today, well, these Jews in there aren't the real Jews to begin with. Look, if you're Jewish, it's your heritage, you're a Jew. But here's my point in all this. Whether you dislike what the Jews do or like what the Jews do, whether you think they're the actual Jews God spoke of or not, or whether you don't even believe that we were ever to honor them, whatever the case is, God did not ask us to do anything greater than we should do for any other person or group of people. You know, we're to treat the Jewish people right. But guess what? We're to treat everyone else right, too. And when there is a wrong, we need to recognize it and not support a wrong. There's times we can't get involved in things because, you know, it's not our country. You know, I can't walk into, I can't fly into Uganda and just walk out and say, hey, look, from now on, everyone in this town is going to function by Judeo-Christian values, and we're going to worship, and we're going to practice Christianity. I can't do that, and so we have to understand that everyone has their own culture, and we can't just go in and force American culture on other people. But what we can do is show them that what you just said a minute ago—that what we do in our kindness is based in biblical doctrine. And we can show them that we love people, and we love and this is why. I truly believe that the love that we have for people has to come through Christ first. And he filters that love to a point. People will ask sometimes, why do you do this stuff for people? I know that when we're doing our Christmas blessing and we're letting people shop for their kids, and they're at the church with everything out, and we provide meals and do those things. People are saying, well, you know, can't those people just get out and work? Well, I don't know. I don't know their personal situation. I want to talk about caring about them and their kids and their family. And pretty much that's what I did with people that came to our blessing last Saturday. I shared that before. I shared it last week that as they come in, I'd meet with them like three families at a time. And we talk about their lives and the things in their lives that they would like to be different, and how generationally we can't pass that on to our kids. And, you know, that's all about loving and caring. I don't think there's anything, I don't think there's anyone that at some point in this country hasn't been at the benefit of something they probably didn't deserve. And while there's people that maybe some people do take advantage of that, but are we going to just stop doing what's right because of a few wrong?
Well, that's, and you know, I'm so glad you've brought this up, Pastor, because about anti-Semitism in general, because, you know, politically and college campuses and in other countries, that's what gets all the attention. But I have been absolutely bamboozled by kids between the ages of, I'll say, 15 and 25, who even have their own slang now that is anti-Semitic. And I don't know what these people's political beliefs are. They certainly aren't in college, the kids that I'm running into, but they have an anti-Semitic, I don't even know if they know that they're saying things that are anti-Semitic. It's almost become like a new catchphrase, and I have never seen anything like that in recent years.
Well, I've seen, you know, here's what I've heard. I've heard kids saying to other kids, man, you're Jewish.
That's it, yes, exactly.
But here's what's ironic about that, okay? But if you would say to them, you are a, and use a derogatory word for a black person, they'd say you were the worst person on earth. And don't they realize they're doing the exact same thing?
Well, exactly, and that's, I say, well, I've said to people, especially the younger ones, because this comes out of 16-year-old's mouth, I say, what does Jewish mean? What are you trying to say? They don't know. They just know they're trying to say something derogatory. They know that, but they don't know what it means. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, they do know enough that they're 16. They know enough that they're referring to Jewish people. And that's who they're referring to.
But what are they meaning? What does that mean? I get that they're referring to Jewish people, but what does it mean? What's the reference? What
I know that when we were growing up, it was always a reference to being tight,
right.
Stingy with money.
Yes.
But I don't know what their reference is. I really don't.
That's what I can't figure out.
I guess they're just trying to promote that that's something bad. I can guarantee you one thing, Scott. That it did not come, it came from the internet. I mean, the whole movement came from stuff they read and hear on the internet that becomes commonplace and okay. I really doubt that there's many classrooms where teachers are telling the kids, oh, you're Jewish. I don't think that's going on. There might be places there is, but the truth is, I think that it came from stuff kids are exposed to on the internet. I mean, that stuff takes root and it just takes off.
Right, and you're exactly right. You know, when I was young, when you were young, what that meant was frugal. But I don't think that's what they're saying. And I don't even know if they mean it derogatory. They mean it as people from the Jewish heritage, but there's no meaning behind it. There's no, it's just mean. It's just, that's a bad word. Okay, well, why?
You know, wouldn't it be nice if it meant resilience?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You know, there has never been in the world ever, ever, anywhere, at any time, throughout history, any group of people more persecuted than the Jewish people. That's a historical fact. Everybody knows it. It's true. They have been from the very beginning. But how interesting, when people came up with the slang about the frugalness and they've got all the money and that stuff, it actually came from the cities, and that came from within the cities. Most of the many of the businesses were operated by Jewish people, and I find it interesting that yes, they were very frugal, but they were resilient despite their persecution. They have been a very resilient people to keep their head up and move forward, and I think that that should be something that we look at in awe of, rather than derogatory of.
Well, and it's interesting because I always think, when I first heard that, I thought, you know, if you put that down on paper, took it out of the mouth, and you just wrote it down and presented it to somebody, it could be used as a good thing, but it's contextually being used as a bad thing.
Absolutely.
But I've never understood that they understand what it means. So I'm not even sure, you know, with most curse words or most whatever people call each other, if they're trying to be derogatory, they know the meaning. They know what they're how they're using that. That's one of those things that is absolutely anti-Semitic, but yet they have no clue. That is so bizarre to me that there's no clue as to what they're saying, except it's negative.
So, in other words, the more they say it, the more they say it, even though they may never know any Jewish people or know anything about them, when they do then confront Jewish people, they already go in with a preconceived derogatory attitude towards them that's very unfair, that has been brought on them by something that was very stupid that really had no meaning to it.
Exactly. And, you know, I've heard it used in the sense where they're not even calling somebody. They're referring to an item. And now that's really contextually off, because it's a bad item is basically what they're saying.
Everything Jewish is conditioned that everything Jewish is bad.
You got it. What could be more anti-Semitic?
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you, in the Islamic culture, and this is something you can look up for yourself, the children are taught from the time they're born that Jews are less than human, Jews need to be exterminated, and they call, you know, Hamas has called for the extermination of Jews, and they won't take that off the table. And so the thing is with those Islamic kids, the kids are brought up under Islam. From the time they're little, they're taught this. There's no reason why they wouldn't hate Jewish people when they become adults and think that they're worthless and don't need to exist because they've been conditioned. Well, what we're talking about is not quite as violent and extreme, but it's the same type of conditioning that conditions these kids. Let me tell you a same conditioning, okay? When kids grew up in the South and in the North from 1870 all the way up through recent years, I'm going to say the 50s or 60s, and the N-word was an everyday word, it was the same thing. It was a derogatory, bad comment. It wasn't to refer to somebody's good nature or good culture or anything. It was used in a bad way. You are a stupid and fill in the blank, even if you're talking to a white person. So what that then does, it preconditions people as they grow up to think negatively of that culture.
That's absolutely right. And you know what's fascinating about it to me with things that were racial slurs? I honestly have always thought that they know what they're saying. And with this new wave of anti-Semitism, it's definitely conditioning, as we've talked about here, to be anti-Semitic. But I honestly, you know, I'm sure you were the same way when you were young as I was young. Things like that meant frugal. But also, we knew Jewish last names. I don't think kids today know what a Jewish last name is, somebody of the Jewish heritage. I don't think they have a clue. I don't think they could spot somebody. I don't think they would know what temple was. I don't think they would understand what a yarmulke was. I don't think they wouldn't even know.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, back to the thing about black culture, you know, when the N-word was such a common everyday word, I don't know that young people, certainly not in the 20th century, knew anything very much about slavery and culture. It was just a word that was used, and especially if they lived in the North, just a word that was used, and they may end up with a good friend that is that person and still use that word. It's just, it really comes down to ignorance. And all that stuff is, I can remember in school, you know, people, you know, calling people WOPs and Polaks, and it didn't mean you didn't have a Polish friend that you liked, but, you know, Polak, what did Polak mean? Polak usually referred to somebody that was stupid, and that was a result of some war decisions years ago, and it just stuck as a slang thing and a joke, and it wasn't very funny. I remember the joke when I was growing up, kid said, how did Hitler invade Poland? He walked in backwards and said he was leaving. Just things of that nature, and they all have to. But they all have to have a starting point. Someone started it, and then it takes off. And what we have to do, the only way we can battle this kind of stuff, is when it does arise, just kind of ignore it. Don't, or just people can tell when you're not accepting of what they say, whether you scold them or not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I just wonder where this is going to go, because I don't think that that phrase is so commonly used now, especially
I know where it's going. The anti-Semitism in this country, in this world, is getting to a feverish pitch. And, you know, just like what you saw happen in Australia, there was no reason for that whatsoever. I did hear some good stories of heroism that came out of that, though. One lady that was sheltering kids next to their dying mother with her own body, and she was in a safe place when she saw them needing aid, and she came out and crawled to them and then was shot herself. She lived, but she sheltered those kids, and she said she was in a sheltered place, and she heard this mom yelling, "Somebody protect my babies," because the mom was bleeding out. And she said, "I knew it was God telling me get out of this ditch and take care of those kids. And I was scared to death. I didn't want shot, and I did it anyway." And she protected those kids and saved their lives, and she lived. And there's good that comes out. Good stories come out of that kind of stuff. But what kind of hatred must you have inside you to go shoot a bunch of people just because of their heritage that you don't even know? You know, if you're pointing a finger at them and saying, "Oh, they deserve it because of the way they treated Palestinians," okay. Well, if you think it's so horrid that they did that, aren't you just as horrid by doing the same thing yourself? Of course you are. None of this makes any sense, Scott.
Well, no, and it doesn't. And I guess what I mean by where is this going, this word is being so widely used now and in such a contextual nature that in 10 years when these kids are in their 30s and late 20s, I mean, what is that going to mean? What is that going to morph into? Because Jewish people, especially in America, because that's where we're hearing it, because Jewish people in America are always going to be in the minority, as will people of most ethnicities at this particular point, or religions. So where's that going to go? I mean, what's that going to mean coming out of a 30-year-old's mouth?
Well, what's really funny is that this younger generation, not necessarily the ones that are turning adults now, but especially the one before, you know, they're all about how bad it was, how white superiorism and white exceptionalism was so wrong, okay? And which I agree with. I mean, it is wrong. Like I said, God so loved the world, he didn't just God so love the white people. But anyway, I think it is wrong, and they'll speak out strongly against that. Well, when you're using derogatory terms to talk about other cultures, it makes no sense that you can at the same time say that you don't believe in white exceptionalism and how bad it was. You're practicing it when you do that.
Well, and I just wish people, you know, it's interesting because we've all had this water issue here in Marion this week, and I was, whatever opinion people had about it, whether they believed that it was okay to drink it, or they believed that it was not, or they believed what Aqua was saying, or they didn't believe what Aqua was saying, you know, that's fine. You can believe or not believe what you want, and you can do and not do what you want. That's your right. But when you try to deceive other people, which I think is what we're talking about here, conditioning people, other people to believe things that aren't necessarily true, that's where the real problem comes in.
Yeah, like that crazy stuff Candace Owens is doing right now over Charlie Kirk. Is that nuts or what?
Well, I don't understand. I do not understand why anybody, if somebody is no longer with us, I do not understand at this point. Didn't we used to have a phrase, don't speak ill of the dead?
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, think ill of the dead, but don't speak it. You know, and in that case, you know, her claiming that people in his own group shot him and this guy didn't shoot him. what in the world is all that craziness about? Why, you know, yeah, you want kids to behave well, and then you do that? That makes sense to me. But, hey, on a brighter note, we got a couple minutes left.
Yeah, we got about 8 minutes left here.
I think it is a bright note. What I'm talking about, and let me throw a real quick spin on this and bring it back to a higher ground. Look, it's important. You know, God says, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. That's the world, folks. Let's love each other. Yes, we have to protect ourselves from things that would influence us in a bad way or take away the freedoms that we have. We have to do that. But part of that is part of that God loving the world. If we're to love those around us, we have to help take care of those around us. And that means that we protect their freedoms too. So be a person that is loving other people, putting others before yourself as God would call us to. Okay, I'll leave that subject alone. We do have a Christmas Eve service at Community Christian Fellowship on Water Street in Prospect. And, you know, we do something a little different than some churches. We do it at 9 o'clock at night. And the reason we do it at 9 o'clock, because we know people are really busy on Christmas Eve. And we hope by 9 they're kind of caught up. And then we encourage parents to, if they'd like to bring their kids or themselves in their pajamas. And, you know, if the kids get tired when they get home, you just take them straight to bed. And we have a very short Christmas Eve service. It's about a half hour. I read the Christmas story, and then we sing some Christmas hymns and Christmas songs by candlelight. This year we bought, I don't know, 120 or 30 battery candles because we got new carpet in the sanctuary, and kids love to watch wax run. But we've got battery candles. But anyway, we do it by candlelight. And it's such a warm, nice time. It lets you celebrate right before you go home, go to bed. And it's just a really wonderful time. I welcome anyone that would want to come to please come. We're right in the middle of town on Water Street. You can't miss it. We're at 209. But, you know, that's a wonderful day. Sunday morning is our Christmas program. And I'm not ready for Christmas to be over with. You know what I mean?
Goes by fast, doesn't it? Goes by fast.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is that you know, I really, really enjoy it. But on top of really, Christmas is our favorite time of year. We are so busy. Shirley's at the church today packing boxes for food boxes for meals for people. Yeah. And, you know, she'll be busy. She just stays busy right up to the time. And she would tell me the other day, Steve, we've got to sit down and finish our Christmas shopping.
You know, it's a busy time of year.
It really is. But it's still a wonderful time of year. And I love being able to help people. You know, my biggest blessing in the world is, Lord, give me enough to help people. And as long as I have enough to do that, I'm comfortable, and you're making someone else's day brighter also.
So we got about 4 minutes left here, Pastor. And again, the Christmas Eve service will be at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, this coming Wednesday, Christmas Eve, 9 p.m. Do not miss that. Right in the center there, Prospect, a great place. Pastor, with about 3.5 minutes, how much thought and effort do you put into the Christmas Eve and Christmas Day service every year?
Service?
Yeah.
You know, it's part of what I am and what I believe, so I don't have to put the effort's not really strong. The thought is, I think it changes from year to year based on the mood I see in the culture and in people, and I may put a little different emphasis on things in a different way. But, you know, the main thing is just to get people to understand that, you know, this truly is a wonderful time. And why we don't have the exact birth date of Jesus Christ, we celebrate it. And it's so important that we remember that. Part of it, you know, his coming was a giving. And it put us into that giving culture and thought. And as we give people things, we do it because we care about them. And it should never be a hassle. It should be from our heart. And that's why sometimes you get to the point, well, all I can give them is gift cards. And I get that, but it's kind of impersonal to me. get that, you know, look, if someone may only have $100 in the bank, they give you a $50 gift card, that's from their heart, right? So I can't really knock it that way, but, you know, just family's so important at this time. Put your grudges aside and love your family. And go to church, right? You know, go to church. It should be such an important part of our culture. But, Scott, I got to run. Man, I love you guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Pastor. You have a great holiday. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship. Don't forget that Christmas Eve service will be this coming Wednesday, Christmas Eve, at 9 p.m. Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, on Water Street, right there in the center of town. And Pastor Steve Whitaker, the pastor of that church, and he's been with us here at the station now, I think, since 2018. So we always have a good time with Pastor Whitaker. And I think it was a very important message today in regard to the big Christmas holiday that's coming up, and everything that that means and is, and also talking about a little today about what's going on in our culture and what people are thinking and believing and feeling and where we are and why we are there and how this has come to this. I think these things are all very important, and I think this is always a good program and a good way to discuss this. Remember, it can be gotten on the internet, WWGH1071.com, or by downloading the absolutely free TuneIn app on any mobile device and searching WGH Talk. That's free. You can put it on your smartphone, your smart television, your tablet, anything you have. It even comes up on Alexa. Alexa, Google Dot, Siri, all you have to say is play WGH Talk, and it will come up. I probably set off a few devices by just saying that. The Pastor Spot airs every Friday here on WGH Talk from 11:15 a.m. until 12 p.m., and we are always happy to talk with our good friend, Pastor Steve Whitaker. You can get archive episodes of the show, thanks to Adam, our webmaster, by going to WWGH1071.com, going to the program archive section, and going down and looking for the date of the Pastor Spot. So do that. Merry Christmas, and I'll be back right after this short but important break here on WGH Talk.
Fun. For Mr. Jingling and the entire WWGH staff and crew.
Then he got enough.